Right, grab a Bible from behind you, please, and turn to Psalm 19, which you should find on page 530. Unless someone's torn out page 530, and you won't. Right, this is the second in our series of Psalms. This is a Psalm, your Psalm last week was a Psalm of David, wasn't it? Oh, Psalm 19, 1-9, 530. Psalm 19 on page 530 of these Bibles. Can you not hear me, darling? Right, Psalm 19. For the director of music, a psalm of David. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. They have no speech, they use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth. Their words go to the end of the earth. In the heavens he has pitched a tent for the sun, which is like a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, like a champion rejoicing to run his course. It rises at one end of the heavens and makes its circuit to the other. Nothing is deprived of its warmth. The law of the Lord is perfect, refreshing the soul. The statutes of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, giving joy to the heart. The commands of the Lord are radiant, giving light to the eyes. The fear of the Lord is pure, enduring forever. The ordinances of the Lord are sure, and all of them are righteous. They are more precious than gold, than much pure gold. They are sweeter than honey from the honeycomb. By them is your servant warned. In keeping them is their great reward, or there is great reward. But who can discern their own errors? Forgive my hidden faults. Keep your servant also from willful sins. May they not rule over me. Then I will be blameless, innocent of great transgression. May these words of my mouth and this meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, Lord, my rock and my redeemer. I'll say this is second in our summer series of Psalms, which is a great piece of alliteration. And this is Psalm 19. Who knew this psalm before today? And I know there's at least one person. I've told you. Apparently, Peter said this is like an oratorio of Handel. Does anyone know that? Can anyone confirm that or deny that? It's just Peter, apparently. I did not know this psalm at all before. It's Psalm of David, so it's written around, it was written 3,000 years ago, 1,000 BC. For the first week of looking at this psalm, I would read it every day and my heart was beating ever faster because I found it's a really weird psalm to look at first because it just leaps around. It starts by praising God's glorious heavens, and then without sort of any sort of reference in between, it suddenly leaps to this rather, this complete jump to talking about the law of God. And then David looks within inside himself a bit, piece of introspection, before at the end devoting the psalm as an offering to God. Now, of course, this is poetry. It was written as a hymn, as Top says, director of music. And of course, poetry doesn't really have to be logical. But I think there is a logic to David's thoughts here. I really hope there is, that we'll find it out now. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go through this psalm chunk by chunk. And then I'm going to say, this is what I really think God has given me for this psalm. And when I say me, I literally mean, Paul standing here, what he's challenged me about. And maybe it's going to be challenging you too. So, looking at the psalm in context. David looks up and sees at the start the majestic glory of the Creator God as seen in the heavens. Now, David was a shepherd. He would have had quite a lot of time to stand up, to sit there looking after sheep every night, looking up and seeing the heavens there. And David sees the heavens to be a startlingly obvious declaration of the creative power and majesty of a Creator God. And looking up here, we see the glory of a Creator God. So even those who have no knowledge of God can see God as displayed in the heavens. We can see how marvellous he is, how wonderful a creator he is. And what God creates, his works are awesome. So verse 1 says, the heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the work of his hands. And so to David, this universe is a startlingly obvious declaration of his creative power. Now when Vince, I really like this when Vince does this. I haven't done it today, I should have done it, it's a great idea. You sort of put a painting. I do that and I remember it's a painting, up on the wall. And then quite often he'll say, who's done that? And normally someone like Mike Gough, or who's got an art degree, will still, not necessarily he's got a good artistry, but you say, you know what, I recognise that. You know, I may not have seen that particular painting before, but I recognise quite literally the work of that hand. And they'll say it's whoever, Van Gogh, or there are other painters, there are several. I don't know them. But you know what I mean? And so what David's doing similar here, and actually I suppose equally, you know, sometimes you ever like listening to a song on a radio and you've not heard it before, but you say, yeah, do you know what, I know it's that person. I know it's them because I recognise the voice, or I recognise the way they sing or the lyrics. You know what I mean here, don't you? Yes, Paul. And it's exactly the same here for David. That he's writing here that the universe obviously declares God's works. And so for even people around the world who may not have heard of Yahweh, the God of Israel, the Creator God, it's obvious to see he's there because you can just look up and see what God has created. So it says here they pour forth speech. And obviously this is poetic here because, of course, there is no speech. And yet, of course, it screams out, God is here. God has done this. Isn't it magnificent? Isn't it marvellous? And so this voice goes out into all the earth. So as I said, even those who have never heard of God can actually see God there. Now, in modern times, you know, sort of some people, in fact, throughout history, some people have sort of looked at the stars and actually seen what isn't there. You know, they see through astrology and they imagine pictures that are there, imagine things that are telling them. Of course, the universe isn't speaking to them in that way at all. And yet, actually, some secular people that don't believe there's a creator God, actually see less than the universe is screaming at them. Does that make sense? Thank you, Richard, for a good nod. The stars won't tell you the future, but in the heavens you can see God's power as a creator God screaming at you with every star. And so to David, this creator is obvious as seen through his creation. And so this divine power sort of shows the folly of atheists who can see this glorious universe and yet say there is no creator who designed it. And it also shows the foolishness of those who worship idols, who say, well, I will worship this or that, whilst not actually giving credit to the glorious God who has created this universe that we can see. So from there, David goes on to talking about the sun. So from verse 4 onwards, second part of verse 4, in the heavens God has pitched a tent for the sun. It's like a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, like a champion rejoicing to run his course. It rises from one end of the heavens and make its circuit to the other. Nothing is deprived of its warmth. This was written at a time when all the nations surrounding Israel worshipped the sun. They literally worshipped the sun. Who took big classics at school? I bet you did, Edward, didn't you? Really? Does anyone know? Yeah, okay. Yeah, now, putting your hand up now, Ben, you put yourself on the spot. What was the name of the Greek god of the sun? Their voice goes out into all the earth. Thank you. Did you know that? You've been saved. Did you know that because the BBC statue? Oh, there was a statue at Television Centre that was Helios. He also had another name as well. Anyone? It was, no, they called him Apollo. Egypt. Does anyone know? I like Ra because you're going to sound like a monster. Ra. What did Ra look like? Do you know? No, head of Big Bird. Not the Big Bird, but a Big Bird. Wouldn't it be terrifying if that was Sesame Street? It's just like some kind of Egypt mythology coming at us. And the other one, I don't expect you to know these ones as well, but Mesopotamia. In fact, you know what? I promise after this, if any of you can tell me what the god of the Mesopotamians called the god of the sun, I will go out of here afterwards and buy you a Mars bar.
It's not Mars.
Does anyone know? Oh, man. You know, I thought in a church like this, I thought someone surely is going to come out of it. They called him Utu, or Shamash. And actually, Canaanites worshipped Shamash as well. At a time when people in all the nations surrounding them actually literally worship the sun, David's saying here quite clearly, the sun is just another creation of this creator God. Who's been to the Middle East? How, in the summer, what's the sun like? When you sort of stand out, I'm guessing you normally wear shades, but does the sun kind of dominate the day? The sun. I mean, in truth, we've lived a bit of it like here for the last couple of weeks. You go out in the sun truly dominates the day. It is an all-powerful, well, it is really blindingly hot, blindingly powerful. Could that be blindingly hot? Burningly hot. And yet it's still yet just another creation of this magnificent Creator God. How amazing, how powerful must be the being that created the sun. It's the greatest creation in the sky, and yet it's just a creation just the same. Having praised God's heavens, this is the bit that I really struggled with when looking at this psalm for the first week. There's just this jump that I think really just has no context. Having praised God's heavens, he just suddenly goes and David just turns and praises God's perfect law. The law of the Lord is perfect. This is from verse 7, refreshing the soul. The statutes of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, giving joy to the heart. The commands of the Lord are radiant, giving light to the eyes. The fear of the Lord is pure, enduring forever. The decrees of the Lord are firm, and all of them are righteous. They are more precious than gold, than much pure gold. They are sweeter than honey from the honeycomb. By them is your servant warned. In keeping them is their great reward. The law of the Lord is perfect. It revives the soul. It's trustworthy, makes wise the simple. It's right, giving joy to the heart. It's radiant, giving light to the eyes. It's pure, it endures forever. It's sure and altogether righteous. Do we regard God's law like this? And once again, this is sort of me looking through this. This was, you know, Paul sort of speaking to Paul. Or when we look at God's law, do we see it as legalistic, irrelevant, and confining? Looking at this, the law of the Lord revives is not really something that I think of when I think of the law as written in the Bible, the law of God as written in the Bible. And I think it's not, maybe speaking for others, and that you may say that's not fair or not correct. But I think the way that most modern Christians view the law, which we just think of as being wrathful or constraining or just simply irrelevant. I'm going to read this passage out, which I've taken from one of the books I looked at. Which rather than just rip it off in bits, I thought I might as well read it out. It's The Message of the Psalms, written by Michael Wilcock. With echoes of the New Testament in our ears, like in Romans chapter 4, verse 15, which states, "The law brings wrath. We may have not ever imagined hearing the law of the Lord refreshing the soul. But we need to grasp here that in the Old Testament, law is a wonderfully comprehensive word, encompassing all that God wants us to know about himself. There is no life for the soul without it. Statutes are the firm principles which God promises are true. On the solid base of their solid truth, simple people like us can build our lives. Precepts are precise rules for living, and it may be a new thought for some that detailed obedience is the right way to joy. Similarly, commands, which have God's authority and are to be obeyed, sound like unwelcome restraints, yet their observance will lead us out into this radiant light. Fear means that what this voice tells us is to be respected, time-honoured truth, permanently valid, and therefore to be revered. Decrees are rulings, God's decisions on practical questions of human behaviour. Here they are altogether righteous, not altogether, which means completely, but all together, meaning the whole lot. Now, after the summer, we as a church, we're going to study the law in Deuteronomy. And I hope, you know, sort of from this moment, certainly for me from this moment, when we look at Deuteronomy, maybe we'll look at the law in a new light, in a positive way. You know, we'll actually change the way we view it, you know, in the future. The law might seem like a really unlikely source of delight. And yet to David, it's more precious than gold, than any obtainable worldly wealth. And it's sweeter than honey, than anything that you can receive that's sort of humanly, worldly, sustainable. And David knows, by them is your servant warned. In keeping them, there is great reward. And what are these rewards? Well, David here tells us himself. A revived soul. To know that one is blameless before God. Godly wisdom. Divine joy and light to the eyes, which I take as meaning will actually see the truth and be able to differentiate truth from falsehood. And how can this be achieved? Because having looked up and seen the majestic glory of the Creator God as seen in the heavens, and then looked down and witnessed God's perfect law, in reaction to this, David looks inside and he sees a sinner. So verses 12 and 13. Who can discern their own errors? Forgive my hidden thoughts. Keep your servant also from willful sins. May they not rule over me. Then I will be blameless, innocent of great transgression. So this psalm addresses the construction of a perfect heavens, the creation of a perfect heavens, the construction of a perfect law, and then David, a man with errors, willful sins, and hidden faults. And yet David here has a great desire, a desire to be blameless, as innocent as he can be in God's sight. So David sees the perfection of God, and in contrast to that, sees his own imperfection, so both intentional and unintentional sins, and wishes to overcome them, to be forgiven, and his desire to be blameless. So we have here in verse 12, forgive my hidden faults. And I think that sort of has, when I sort of read that, it reminded me of like in the Lord's Prayer, where, lead us not into temptation. And then we finish here with verse 14. May the words of my mouth and this meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, Lord, Rock and Redeemer. And David concludes here by offering this psalm, this meditation, as a praise offering to God. And in this last verse here, we see the relationship between the two of them, between David the psalmist and God. We see that God is his Lord, his master. And obviously note here that we don't know in truth when David wrote this psalm, but there certainly was a point at which David was a king. And I think actually when we look at David's other psalms, we see that this relationship didn't change from when he was David the shepherd to when he was David the king, which is actually why David the shepherd was chosen by God to become David the king. We see that God is his Lord, his master. We see that God is his rock, that solid ground, something certain, something unchangeable, something you can actually put your faith and rest in. And that God is his redeemer. That David acknowledges that God is both the source and the determiner of his salvation. And David wants to please God. He really wants to please him. He wants to be forgiven. Why? And it's because of that relationship. Because God is to David his Lord, his rock, and his redeemer. So this psalm shows a relationship. A relationship between a Lord and his servant. Between the rock and the man who needs something firm in which to believe, in which to put his faith. And the relationship between the Redeemer and he who is redeemed. It's a relationship between a perfect, loving, just creator and that servant who needs stability and forgiveness. So, what did I get from this psalm when I was looking at it? I was really struck by David's introspection. In the last three verses, one thing that really got me is, once again, the third time, this is what hit me, is do I realise the sinfulness of sin? And that I should be aware of it. And do I disregard God's commands because we live under grace and not the law? Does that make sense? Yeah. How often do I just do something and think, oh, you know what, I can be forgiven? And that is not right. I know it's not right. We know it's not right. As he says here, keep your servant from willful sins. May they not rule over me. And shouldn't that be a prayer for us all? And I think it ties in well with, obviously we've been studying, for those who haven't been here, of late we've been studying James of late. And of course one of the things of James is faith and works. And I think this ties in well with that. Because of course works don't save. But this is... Do you know what? I forgot it here. This is faith and obedience. Obeying God. Because God commands it. Obeying God, because we live under grace. Obey God because we know what is right from wrong, and therefore doing right and choosing not to do wrong. Not being dragged down a path of sinning willfully, knowing that we have a God who will forgive us. So the first thing I got from this is this. Do we treat God as Lord? Are we obedient disciples? And secondly here, David knows he can put his faith in his trustworthy, just creator God. Do we know that God is our rock? Do we trust in God 24/7? Or just when we're going through hard times? Now, fantastic here, we've got David's life from, from when he was young and he was a shepherd to when he was a king when he died. And we know that David, through his entire life, though he was a man who made pretty, pretty big mistakes, like we all make, he was a man who trusted God 24/7 through his entire life. That his spiritual life was a marathon, and not just something sort of lived in short sprints, just when he needed God? Do we have God as that rock in the same way? So David knew he was flawed. We know David's flawed. David knew he was flawed as well, given both to willful and unintentional sins. And yet God is solid. God is forever the same. And what is God like? Well, God is like his law, as we see here in verses 7 to 9. God is perfect. God is trustworthy. God is right. God is radiant. God is pure. God is firm and righteous. God can be trusted. God can be forever relied upon. So this knowledge, as David writes here, really is more precious than gold. Thirdly, whilst he's far from perfect, David knows he can be blameless in God's sight. That there is redemption there. There is forgiveness. Lastly, do we know God as Redeemer? We know David's sin is written in the Old Testament for all to see. But yet too, we know David was forgiven. It says in Acts, David was a man after God's own heart. Now for us, we're blessed. This psalm was written 1,000 years BC, and of course the sea is before Christ. And in Christ, we see the Redeemer. We see God redeem mankind through his Son. And what cost that redemption was? The crucifixion of God, someone who was completely innocent, dying for us, who are anything but innocent. And what was Christ like? Yet again, Christ is God, and so like his law, Christ was perfect, trustworthy, just, radiant, pure, firm, and righteous. And in Jesus, we see someone who is more precious than gold, than anything we could ever buy, where we're as rich as Croesus. Christ, man alive, is so much more worthwhile, costly than that. And Christ sustains us more than we could ever find any pleasure in this world, whether it be food or entertainment or seeing the world or whatever. Christ sustains us and fills us more than that. So Christ is more precious than gold and sweeter than honey. Thank goodness, praise God, that we have a Lord, we have a rock, and we have a Redeemer. Psalm 19 reads like a man in awe of the wondrous majesty of a creator God, an honest love of his perfect law, a desire to be blameless in the light of this law, and a desire to please God with his thoughts and words. May these words of my mouth and this meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Should that not be our thought and prayer with everything we say and do? Cheers.